This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread, the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yijun, a food writer and cook from the Gin and Tonic recipe blog. Every week on this show, we explore a particular dish, ingredient, or culinary story, and I bring in some food friends and experts to feed our bellies and minds. Now, as Malaysians, we often take massive pride in our local cuisine. You know, nothing beats a good nasi lemak or side of rendang or a rich brothy bowl of laksa, right? And don't even get me started on cendol. But if you, like me, live around KL or Selangor or one of the more popular cities in the country, the local food that we eat are often pretty much the same, you know? I mean, yes, we know places like Penang and Malacca have great cendol, and we know Terengganu is famous for their keropok leko and nasi dagang, and Johor and Sarawak have their own special versions of laksa. And Kedah, well, Kedah has plenty of rice? Sorry, Kedahans. But outside of these well-explored tropes, what we know about Malaysian food and Malaysian ingredients is sadly quite insular. Or maybe that's just me. So it's always super exciting when you come across a restaurant that claims to serve Malaysian food, but then you have a look at their menu and there are dishes and ingredients in there that you've never come across in your whole life living in Malaysia. I mean, have you heard of buah kulim or temu pau? Have you tried banana blossoms or eaten a relish made with the flesh of rubber seeds? See, it's not just me, right? So this week on Breaking Bread, we are going to explore some of the lesser-known, forgotten flavours of Malaysia and talk about the evolution of Malaysian cuisine. And we're doing it through the man behind said restaurant, Andrew Wong from Open House. Thanks for coming by today, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Jude.
So your restaurant seems to be making some buzz in the food scene in Malaysia, right?
Yeah, that's been quite a surprising response to it, which I'm very happy, of course, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I think, of course, I'm proud of it, you know, being the owner and the person behind it. But I think a lot of Malaysians are also beginning to be very proud of this restaurant.
Mm. How did the whole concept of the restaurant come about?
Well, you know, many years ago, just maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, because I have another restaurant called Acme Bar and Coffee. Mm. We've been doing this for nearly 8 years now. And we were thinking, what were we going to do, you know, for the next act, basically? About 4 years ago, we thought about doing a Malaysian restaurant, but never really found a place for it until this space opened up for us in KLCC. And we thought this is the perfect location for it. And I think also, you know, we've learned so much over the years as well, and it all came together perfectly, I think. And that's how we had this seed of an idea to open this Malaysian restaurant.
Mm. To be honest, I don't quite know how to describe your restaurant to people, right? Because you can say it's a Malaysian restaurant, but then, as I said, you have a look at the menu and things there that, you know, people are just super unfamiliar with.
That's the thing. See, because the feedback that I get when I work, you know, the floor, a lot of them have said to me two things, actually. One of them said, I can't believe this is actually Malaysian food. Are you sure? I said, yes, this is all Malaysian food. And the other thing that I get a lot back from people that I speak to, they say that, oh my goodness, the last time I had this was when grandma was alive.
Wow.
Yeah. So these dishes are what we do in Open House. They are actually quite old dishes. But, you know, we have sort of revived it and refreshed it for a modern take, still being very respectful to the original recipe, because I always believe that, you know, good things, you don't really have to change too much, but we just freshen it a little bit, you know, change a little bit here and there to make it modern, so to speak.
Okay, yeah. To give our listeners like a taste of your menu, I'm just going to read out some of the dishes you have, right? It's full of crazy things. So I guess for starters, you have like udang salut gelede, you have horseshoe crab roll kerabu, then you have like smoked duck with chiku salsa, gulai maman, and then you even have this rice that you serve in a pitcher plant. Right?
That's right. Yes,
that is crazy. I've never seen anything like that before.
Well, right. You know, in the jungles, and we've got a lot of big jungles here in Malaysia, the orang asli actually use the pitcher plant as a vessel to cook their food in.
Right.
Yeah. So we took that out and we brought it, you know, onto an elevated dining experience in open house. But it does lend, of course, visually is amazing, but it does lend a certain flavor to the dish that we use it with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to come up with all these dishes, did you have to do a lot of research? You were saying the rice cooked in a pitcher plant, it came from like an Orang Asli village. So did you go out into those areas and...
To be honest with you, I won't even know where to start because we didn't even know such things existed, obviously. But I have an amazing team. The head chefs, you know, Chef Uzaidi, Yus, and Yazid. When we sat down to talk about this project, right, we had a few things that we said we need to do and we should do. And of course, drawing from the entire team, I mean, at the time, I already had 4 restaurants. I had about 15 people going back to the different kampongs and different states to bring back all these amazing recipes and produce, things that I've never seen before. You know, I know my vegetables, I know my zucchini flowers and my kale and my radicchios and all that. But some of the stuff that came back and was in front of me when we were doing our food trials and all of that, I was like, I can't believe this is from here. But then again, you know, if you think about it, Malaysia actually has a very rich, you know, biodiversity, rich flora and fauna. So it's no surprise actually to some of us now to think that we can get all this stuff from the jungles. And, you know, the Orang Aslis and the villagers have been eating this for a very, very long time. And we get to enjoy it now in the city.
Yeah, I think it's lovely that you're trying to like shine the spotlight on some of these interesting or even forgotten ingredients, right? Yeah. And in front of you, you actually brought with you to the studio some of these ingredients. Do you want to just introduce them?
Yeah, sure. So right here in front of us is, of course, the buah kepayang, also known as the kluak.
Ah, buah kluak. So they use it in like the nyonya
Correct.
Cooking.
That's right.
Lot, right.
That's right. So, you know, as you know, the buah kluak or kepayang, it's mainly called kepayang on the peninsula and kluak in Indonesia. That's what we found out. It's actually poisonous. So there's a lot of preparation or pre-preparation before you can actually eat it. You need to bury this seed in ash and banana leaves and in earth for like 40, 50 days before you can actually eat it. It turns from a creamy white texture to this blackened thing because of the, you know, the gases all escape. And besides that, you need to run it in running water for about 7 days.
I saw some documentary of some auntie in like Orang Asli village just leaving this buah kepayang in the stream, right?
That's how they do it. You got to have it, you know, prepared carefully. So of course they do all of that first. Orang Asli, we buy this from the Orang Aslis basically. And then when it comes to our kitchen, just to be sure, we even soak it for another 5 more days to get rid of all the residues. And then we prepare it for a couple of our dishes in the restaurant. One of the more popular ones is the soup ekor kepayang, where we stuff the nut with oxtail as well.
Wow.
And then you get this really unusual earthy flavor to the soup and as well as to the fruit itself. This other thing here is the rubber nut kernel. It's, we actually turn that into a sambal. And believe it or not, it takes us about 2 months of steeping before we can actually even use this in our sambal.
Oh, wow. So is a rubber seed sambal something that's common in Malaysia?
It's more common in the central part, in Perak and Pahang.
Right.
Yeah. They use this as one of the ingredients in the sambals.
Right.
It gives you a bit of a strange, I wouldn't say weird, it's strange because it's a flavor that you haven't really quite tried before. It leaves an unusual texture on your tongue for a short period.
Right.
And then...
Is there a smell to it? Or?
No, it's none actually, but it's just the flavoring and the texture on it of the nut. But yeah, it takes us about 2 months to prepare the sambal.
Wow. Wait, you actually have the sambal with you right now, right?
I do, the isirong.
Yeah, so let's try some of it out.
Try some of that. So you know, like all sambals, it has to be freshly tumbuk lah.
So this was fresh this morning, is it?
We actually have to let it sit for a couple of days as well. So this is probably about a day or two old already.
Oh yeah, I think I got some of the rubber. Or at least there's a texture in there that I'm not familiar with.
That's what it does.
What else is in the sambal? I see a lot of like onions, shallots.
Yes, and chili, of course, in our sambals. And also some belacan in it as well.
So this rubber seed it lends, as you say, a different texture to your regular sambal, right?
Exactly, that's right. Then the other one that we have here, which is also very popular with our guests in the restaurant, is the hitam kepayang, the black nut.
Ah, okay.
So this is the one where, you know, I mean, when we say it's poisonous, it's, you know, it doesn't really quite kill you. It does give you a bit of a buzzy high, basically. And again, you know, it has this richness to it, this very earthy richness.
Oh, I love this one.
Yeah, right?
Actually, would you classify this as a sambal?
Well, you know, sambals can be so many things to so many people. Each family right. even have their own, you know, family recipes to it as well. So sambal is not just about it being hot and spicy only, although that it seems to be the common ground.
Yeah, so this one's, it's like black and pasty, and it's very different from other sambals out there, especially the ones that you have with your nasi lemak, I guess.
Yeah.
And the smell is so earthy and almost like truffly, right?
Yeah, that's right. Mm,
it's really nice.
So, and then we have another one, which is also quite unusual. This is the temupau.
So temupau, I checked, the English name is mango ginger?
For lack of a better word.
Right.
So there's no direct translation. In Latin, it's called curcuma Dharma, I think.
Oh my God. So the smell, it's really like the green mango
exactly.
smell, right?
Yeah. I liken it more to a quinine, in fact. But yeah, and when you try it again, it has got this freshness in it and that mangory, you know?
Yeah. And there's no mangoes in this,
there's
right?
There's no mango oh in it, gosh. Trust me.
Oh my gosh. My mind is slowly getting blown.
Yeah.
And you actually have the temupau.
I have the raw fruit here.
Right.
And that, you know, it really looks like ginger. It comes from the same family of rhizomes, but it is not ginger.
Oh. Yeah, the smell is really, it's a lot like fresher and vibrant than a regular ginger smell where it's just like earthy, like it's
exactly.
a rhizome. Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This one is very different. It's like fruity almost.
And so it's cool. A lot fresher as well. And then what we have here as well is I had to close this inside this container because the smell is super strong. This is the bois coulis.
Oh, I've seen this one before. So I bought, funny story, I bought this once in Ipoh and I had no idea what to do with it. And it's super strong, right?
Yeah.
And it tastes very garlicky and... As you say, it's truffly.
And it has a truffle
overtone,
scent,
right?
Yeah. Mm. But, you know, there's no garlic or truffle in it. And we use this for rice that we do in open house. And I remember when the team brought this back for the first time and I had it, right? And I just said to the boys, I said, this is not very Malaysian, you know, putting truffle onto the rice. And they all looked at me like, you know, ha, 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 you know, there's no truffle in this. And I said, well, what do you mean, you know? And they showed me this fruit, and I was just blown away by it. And they told me everything comes from this particular fruit. It's also a jungle item. Orang Aslis will eat it. And it's also a tonic, basically. They also use it for health purposes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. This last one here, you have...
Right. So that's the kulat kukur, which is a wild fungus. And normally where you find this is grown on the sap of the rubber tree, basically.
Oh, yeah. It's a fungus.
It's a fungus, basically.
Right.
It's called kulat kukur. It's almost like what do you call it, a cendawan in a way. And we also turn this into a sambal. But when you cut it and you slice it, and unfortunately we didn't bring any of that here to try today, it tastes almost like a rendang because it's very, you know, it's got this incredible texture. It's almost like, you know.
It really smells like all those, you know, when you go to the Chinese dried goods store.
Yeah.
And then, it's super umami smelling.
Yes,
right?
That's right.
Nice. Oh my God, so many interesting ingredients that you use that I've hardly come across in like 20 plus years of living in Malaysia, right?
Oh, this is just, you know, we're just scratching the surface, I think.
Yeah. So looking forward to what are the dishes you come up with over the next couple of years, man.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that one too.
So we're going to now take a quick break. I've been speaking to Andrew Wong from Open House, a restaurant that's serving Malaysian food, but not quite the ones you're familiar with. When we return, we'll talk about the evolution of Malaysian food and where Andrew thinks Open House fit in it. Stay tuned. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread, the show where we salivate over the merest whisper of sambal. I'm Jun, and I've been speaking to Andrew Wong from Open House Restaurant. We've been talking about some of the crazy ingredients that he brought along with him today. They're all Malaysian, but, you know, more than half of them I've never seen before in my life. But, Andrew, when I visited your restaurant, right, one of the things that really struck me about it was the level of hospitality at your place, right? So it's very rare when you go to a Malaysian restaurant that you see and you feel welcomed and the warmth of the staff, the team, right? And when you talk to them, you get a sense that they really know their stuff. They really know their produce and they can explain to you passionately what the things that you're eating are. And that's a rare find in Malaysia. How do you cultivate that sort of attitude?
Before we opened this restaurant, we already started hiring the team about 10 to 11 months pre-opening. And they were with us also during the food trials and all that. We had up over 150 different dishes for trials.
Wow.
And we narrowed it down to about 40 in the end. But it was also important for us that Open House wasn't just a restaurant featuring Malaysian produce and Malaysian food. We wanted to bring back the whole idea of Malaysian hospitality. We are very warm people. And I know sometimes living in a city, you know, we forget that, you know, I'm not saying that we are not nice people living in a city, but, you know, we would like to bring that kind of feeling back. And I guess, you know, being in KLCC as well and trying to elevate Malaysian cuisine into a finer dining experience, we wanted to have the kind of service level that commensurate with the kind of standards that we wanted to achieve. So we hired a team of very experienced people in the fine dining industry. I mean, the general manager, Jasmi, and Effendi, and Yati, and all of them. They have been in this business, each of them, I think about 20 years. So altogether, you know, they have been in this business for 60, 70 years together. So, and they are the ones who are the ones training the team, making sure that, you know, we know our things. And of course, the head chef, Huzadi and Yus also, you know, we constantly have food training, any new dishes or even new staff joining us as well. They go through the whole process and understand the provenance of the produce as well as how the dish is cooked. That's also partly because, you know, for a lot of Malaysians and of course tourists coming to visit us, they have never eaten this dish before as well, and they want to know how and what this is. So it's part and parcel of what we do. We've got to train them so that, you know, we understand this as well, and therefore our guests will get to know more about the dishes.
Yeah. I have to say, like, the first time I went there, so I was like super impressed, right?
Thank you.
But as Malaysians, right, when we can get quite price sensitive, right? So when they see on your menu, as you say, it's kind of like a finer, if not fine dining restaurant. When you look at like a basket of ulam for $30 and a gulai, like stuff that are very familiar to Malaysians, and then you look at the price and the Malaysian feeling in you is like, oh, I can get this at the local, whatever, Malay restaurant for like 20% of the price here. And how do you justify that?
Well, a few things. First of all, some of these ingredients, the jungle produce, they are not commercially farmed. So to many of us, you know, you'd be surprised. They are actually quite expensive. I mean, for example, the burung tenggek, you know, it's about 30 ringgit per kilo because they are not commercially farmed. Again, they're grown in the jungles and, you know, it may be small plots in kampongs. And again, you know, we have a runner running around collecting all of this and bringing it back to our
kitchens. Almost like you have to go foraging for
exactly,
it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, like the buah kulim, you know, it's not commercially grown. And they've got to run into the jungles to bring it out. Those things, for example, are expensive. The other thing that's expensive in Malay dining, the way that we do it, you know, don't forget, a lot of all this Malay cuisine or even the kampung food, right? It takes a lot of labor to create it. We have about 22 staff in the kitchen for a restaurant that seats 70. That's 1-3 ratio just for the kitchen staff alone. Because there's a lot of tumbok going on. Again, like I said, some of these sambals, for example, it takes up to 2 months to cure it. Like the pais barumundi, for example, you know, we can't just serve it as it is like that. We just don't pour a hot sauce on it and then we serve it. We actually have to marinate that overnight. And the pre-preparation of all the different spices and all of that, in the herbs and all of that, it's a lot of work. I guess those days in the kampung, right, because, you know, you have a lot of time And, you know, the nenek and all that can do it over the whole day.
Mm.
But in the city nowadays, a lot of us don't get to eat this also partly because it's so labor intensive. And people find ways to shortcut things and all that. We don't. Even using, you know, for our rendang, for example, we don't just use sugar. We use gula kabong, which is the correct way of doing it to get that dark caramelized color in the rendang. So all these things cost money and it's labor intensive. It takes a lot of time. And I hope when people look at what we do here is, you know, they feel like, well, you can't just get this the way it used to be done before.
Mm.
The same thing even with our satay. I mean, our satay, you know, we use an Australian beef for the satay. And the reason we do that, not because we want to raise the price, but because the Australian beef, somehow the texture is pretty amazing. So when we still charcoal grill it and with our hand pound, still made in-house kacang sauce, you know, it tastes completely different. I mean, that was one of the few dishes when I first put it on the menu, like, oh my God, I'm going to get, you know, raked over the coal for this. But, you know, we say we've got to put a satay dish. But how do we make this amazing?
Mm.
And that's why. And it's, strangely enough, it's one of our most popular dishes now in open house.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, it's really hard, right? Especially when you have to endure the wrath of Malaysians.
Well, I think partly because, you know, we were like, sometimes we're just foolish.
It's good to be foolish sometimes. Yeah. And I really think, like, at the same time, right, it's like going back to, you know, how you said you have to find these ingredients, you have to forage for these ingredients in the jungle. And there's a real movement in the food world nowadays. Like, you look at Noma at Copenhagen, you look at like Puyol and Quintonil in Mexico, places like that, they are pushing for a more local, more indigenous cuisine, right? And sure, it's fine dining. Some people might say it's too Ponzi even. But I think there's a need for us to go in that direction and really elevate Malaysian food and make the general food tastes better, right, in Malaysia.
Mm. I absolutely agree with you. In fact, the two places that you mentioned was where we went and got really inspired also for open house. Mm. We were in Noma, Tulum, 2 years ago. And after that, we went to Quintanilla as well in Mexico
right.
City. And that's when I realized as well that, you know, they're using local indigenous produce. And they elevated it to a point where it was just, you know, I mean, of course, we are not Noma. And Noma's style of cooking and all that's very different from us.
Mm-hmm.
They take local produce and interpret it in a modern way. For us, we are still very traditional. We are still using generational recipes, as I call it. But we updated it and refreshed it a little bit. Very respectful to the original still. But, you know, it's true because this whole movement going back to our root and rediscovering who we are, I think it's very much a movement here in Malaysia as well. I think in the last couple of years, especially, I think Malaysians are rediscovering our own pride.
Mm.
And maybe it's just a zeitgeist of time, you know, when we opened. I'm glad we did what we did.
I'm super glad that you're around. And I think the Malaysian food scene is looking up like for the next few years. Yeah.
Oh, I
especially,
think so.
Yeah. When you look at Singapore and Thailand, they're doing so well, right? And then you see, why is Malaysia lagging behind? And
yeah.
But with people like you, I think our future is looking a bit brighter. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's important for us to get the message out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Malaysian food has been so underrated for so long, I think. You know, mm-hmm. when you talk about Asian food, people know Japanese or Thai or Vietnamese, but somehow Malaysian gets, you know, we don't even get talked about.
Mm.
I do understand some reasons behind it. I mean, you know, when someone asks what's Malaysian food, is it Malay, is it Indian, or is it Chinese, or is it, you know, what you get in East Malaysia?
Mm.
So what is Malaysian food? You know, what is the national dish? It's hard to pin it down, basically.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, we are a sum of so many different parts, and that's Malaysia. And I think if we can continue to talk more about this, you know, not just in Malaysia, but outside, you know, which Singapore is doing a great job, we should do the same as well. I mean,
yeah.
we do own this. We do own a lot of all of this.
Mm. Yeah. Do you see there was a Netflix, new Netflix series about street food? I think it's called Street Food. Then the countries that are featured in there are like, you have Singapore, Vietnam, Thailand, all our neighbors except us. And I'm so peeved about that.
Me too. I mean, this is not the first time. And you know, but kudos to whoever managed to contact the producers in Netflix to get them to talk about street food there. Mm. And I feel sometimes, you know, we should do more ourselves. You know, you can't just say that, you know, because Singapore is better at it, but you know, they got the word out. Mm. And we need to get our word out. And that's the whole thing. I think that's one of my mission now with Open House is to get the word out.
Cool. I wish you all the best in getting the word out there.
Thank you, June.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you.
That's all we have for this week's show. For more episodes, head to www.bfm.my or find us on iTunes, Spotify, or on the BFM app. And if you're hungry for more funky food writing and recipes, you can check out my blog at junandtonic.com. That's JUNANDTONIC.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.